Okay.
So, as I was saying yesterday, this text is written for people who want to become fully enlightened Buddhas and who are in the process of generating the bodhicitta, the aspiration for full enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, and who want to do the practices of the bodhisattva. Okay? And so the first chapter talked about the benefits of bodhicitta. The second chapter started talking about how to prepare our mind to generate bodhicitta. So the second chapter talked about offerings and paying homage, and it also talked about confession and revealing our mistaken actions and purifying them. And so remember that we were saying that these are all some of the practices of Puthien Pusa. Did I say it okay? Yeah, so Samantabhadra is the Sanskrit name. So chapter 3 continues with some of those practices of Samantabhadra. And so the verses that we covered last night, the first 3 verses, are the verses about rejoicing, where we rejoice in our own and others' virtue, in our own and others' good deeds and goodness and good fortune. Okay? So now, tonight, we'll start with verse 4. And this is another one of the vows of Samantabhadra. And it's the vow or the practice of requesting to receive teachings. Okay? So the verse reads, "With folded hands, I beseech the fully awakened ones in all directions that they may kindle the light of Dharma for those who fall into suffering owing to confusion." Okay? So with hands folded, with our palms together like this, indicating that we really mean what we're saying. You know, we're not being flippant. We're being very sincere. Okay, we beseech the fully awakened ones, the Buddhas, in all the directions, so all the Buddhas in everywhere in the entire universe, up, down, east, west, north, south, the intermediate directions, everywhere, that they may light the light of the Dharma, they may kindle the light of the Dharma, okay? So kindle the light of the Dharma here means to give teachings. Yeah? And it's important that we receive teachings because in order to gain any realizations, as we were discussing last night, we have to first hear the teachings and then think about them and then meditate on them. Okay? So to receive teachings, we have to request teachings. Yeah, the Buddha doesn't come along and say, "Here I am, I'm going to teach you." We have to request. And so the tradition is usually that we request 3 times to receive teachings. Or if we want to take refuge or take the 5 lay precepts, we request, and we request more than once. Okay? In other words, we have to put out our energy in order to receive the teachings and receive the spiritual guidance. Yeah? We shouldn't expect our spiritual teachers to be our employees and our servants. Okay? Sometimes we do. Sometimes we're a little bit like spoiled babies. Okay? Because I'll hear people say, "Oh, you're having teachings at 7:30. Can't you make the teachings at 7 o'clock? It's much more convenient for me if the teachings are at 7 o'clock. Yeah. Why are the teachings so long? Can you make the teachings shorter? I'm busy. I want to go. I have other things I need to go and do. You know. Or they say, "Oh, you're scheduling the retreat this weekend. That's not a good weekend. Can you make it that weekend? I can come then." You know, and no kidding, I can't, you know, tell you sometimes the things that students ask of their teachers, as if, You know, our teachers were our servants, and they should completely do everything in a way that's convenient for us. You know? So we need to very much overcome that kind of attitude that either takes our teachers for granted and takes the teachings for granted, you know, or the attitude that really expects everything to be on our terms and the way we want to have it, you know, and instead to cultivate the mind that really sees the preciousness of the teachings and the kindness of our spiritual mentors for teaching us. And because we see the value of the teachings and we really earnestly want to receive them, then we go and we humbly request, you know, please teach me. Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, the more we have that mind that appreciates the teachings and appreciates our teacher, the more we're going to be open and receptive when we hear the teachings. When we have the mind that this is like, oh, well, you know, somebody's there teaching and, you know, it's their job teaching and I have nothing better to do tonight, so yeah, I'll go and I hope they give a good talk that's funny. I don't want to be bored to death like I was last time I went. You know, if we have that kind of idea in our mind, are we very open and receptive? No. Even the Buddha appeared before us and taught us the Dharma, we would find something to complain about, or we would be bored, we would be unappreciative. So I think it's really important for us to do some contemplation about this and to really feel it in our hearts, you know, so that we are willing to go out of our way to receive teachings, you know, and that we're willing to go to our teachers and make an offering and kneel down and say, please teach me, you know. And then if we request teachings, to show up for the teachings. Yeah, because I've had it happen where somebody's requested teachings. I organized the teachings for a group and then the person who requested it didn't come. Unbelievable, but believable. It happened. Okay, so not taking the teachings and teachers for granted is something that is important for us, you know, to make our own mind more receptive to the teachings. Okay, so the verse says, you know, to kindle the light of the Dharma, in other words, to give teachings, for those who fall into suffering owing to confusion. In other words, please teach all of us suffering sentient beings who cycle up and down in samsara again and again under the power of our confusion and our ignorance. And you know, somebody, I've been having some interviews these days, and somebody yesterday came to interview me, and she asked, what have you learned over these years in your Dharma practice? And I said, well, one of the things I've learned that I haven't completely comprehended yet, I feel like I'm just beginning to get some understanding of it, is the depth of our ignorance. Yeah, how deep and persistent our ignorance is. When I first came to the Dharma, you know, I didn't think I was very ignorant. I mean, okay, I didn't know calculus very well, but so what? You know, that's how I defined ignorance, you know, that kind of thing. But then as I began to practice Dharma and really look at my own mind and see how many wrong conceptions exist in my mind, and how even if I have intellectually the right conception, I often forget it in my daily life and I act under the influence of the wrong conceptions. Yeah. So really seeing how we sentient beings are so ignorant that we don't even realize how ignorant we are. Hmm? Yeah, when we see that more and more, then we really have compassion for ourselves and for others. Because we really see how much we suffer under the force of our ignorance and confusion. Okay? When we see that clearly, then when we make requests to our teachers to teach the Dharma, there's really some strong feeling in our heart of, you know, I've been suffering all this time due to my ignorance, and so has everybody else. And please, you know, show me the way out of my own ignorance. Okay. When we have that feeling strongly and we request strongly like that, then our mind is so ripe and open to receive, to hear the Dharma. Yeah. So we practice developing that kind of state of mind by, you know, reading these verses and trying to meditate as they describe. Okay? So that's verse 4. Verse 5. Yeah. With folded hands, I supplicate the jinas. The jinas means the conquerors, means which refers to the Buddhas, because they've conquered all the defilements. So with folded hands, I supplicate the conquerors who wish to leave for nirvana, that they may stay for countless eons, and that this world may not remain in darkness. Okay, so this is another one of Samantabhadra's practices, and here we are requesting the Buddhas, please don't pass into parinirvana, but please keep on manifesting in our world. Yeah, so we're requesting the Buddhas, please appear in our world in whatever form is suitable to subdue sentient beings' minds. Please manifest in those forms and teach us and guide us. Don't abandon us for your own nirvana. Now, of course, from the side of the Buddhas, they would never abandon us to remain in their own self-complacent nirvana. Okay, because the whole reason they attained enlightenment was to be able to benefit us. So we don't have to worry about them kind of walking out on us. But the thing is, we walk out on the Buddhas. Okay? And so what this verse is trying to do is to get us to pay attention to the Buddhas and how precious it is, you know, to live in an age where, for example, Shakyamuni Buddha has appeared and has given teachings, and, you know, where we can learn those teachings, and where Buddhas have manifested in many other forms, some of which we don't always recognize, but in different aspects in order to teach us and guide us. Yeah. And so when we see this and we really appreciate it and request them to come and teach, then again our own mind becomes much more supple, much more open to hearing teachings, much more appreciative of the Dharma. And that open, receptive mind enables us to gain realizations. Okay? Then, verse 6, may the virtue that I have acquired by doing all this relieve every suffering of sentient beings. So this is the practice of Samantabhadra of dedication of merit. Okay? So all the virtue that we've required by doing all of this refers to paying homage to the Buddhas, bowing to them, making offerings, confessing our mistaken actions, rejoicing at our own and others' virtues, requesting the Buddhas and our teachers to teach us, requesting the Buddhas to continue to manifest in the world. So all these preceding practices that we did, all the virtue, the merit, the good karma that we created from that, we're now dedicating. Okay? And how are we dedicating it? So that every suffering of every sentient being can be relieved. In other words, we're dedicating so that every sentient being can attain liberation and full enlightenment, so that none of the suffering of cyclic existence can touch them anymore. Okay? So dedicating our virtue is actually a practice of generosity. And I'll tell you a very touching story. When I first came to Singapore in 1987, you know, some of you I've known since then. That was 21 years ago that I first came to Singapore, and I was living here and teaching. And one man, you know my little book, I Wonder Why? Some of you seen that? So one of the men who very kindly sponsored the first printing of that book, okay? So, I mean, really a lot of kindness because the book is still in print now and he was the one who started it. Anyway, he came one day to me and wanted me to explain something about meditation and how to do the different prayers and recitations. And so I sat with him and explained all that to him. And then at the end, I said, let's dedicate the merit that we created. And by dedicating the merit, we imagine that we give all the positive potential, the good karma that we've created, we share it with all the other sentient beings, and we really wish that it ripen in their happiness. And this man, he was so sincere, he looked at me and he said, I have so little merit, I don't want to give it away. No, I mean, he was really frightened by dedicating the merit. And I said to him, it's okay, don't worry. You know, when you give your merit, you actually increase it and there's more of it. You don't have to worry about giving it away and not experiencing any good results of it yourself. You know, you will experience the good results. Okay, so we really, when we dedicate at the end of our meditation sessions, at the end of our teaching sessions, you know, we really want to have a sense of richness and then share all that virtue with all the sentient beings, you know, really aspiring that it ripen in their ultimate happiness. Okay, now, okay, so the first verses that we talked about, these first six verses, were the continuation of the vows of Samantabhadra that were started in chapter 2. Now, in verse 7, we're going to start a new section where Shantideva is talking about how to transform our mind into an attitude that is most able to benefit sentient beings. In other words, how to really open our mind and dream in a very expansive way of how we would like to benefit sentient beings. Okay? And the purpose of this is to really increase our inspiration and our aspiration to be of great benefit and service to other living beings. And when we do this, it has the effect of making it easier for us to actually be beneficial. Yeah? Because sometimes we may encounter situations where we could do something to help somebody, and we go, I'm busy. I don't have time. They don't deserve it. They haven't been nice to me. You know, we have 1,001 excuses why we can't do something nice for somebody. Okay? When we practice these verses that are written in here of really aspiring to benefit sentient beings, it really turns our mind in that direction and familiarizes us with that intention, and that makes it much easier when we actually encounter a situation when we could be of benefit, to not be lazy or not be lacking in compassion, and to spontaneously just reach out and help. Okay? So we're going to start these verses now that talk about you know, generating the aspiration to benefit. Okay? So the first verse in this section, it's verse 7, says, may I be the medicine and the physician for the sick. May I be their nurse until their illness never recurs. Okay? So think about it. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be a Buddha where you could manifest many different bodies according to what different sentient beings needed at any particular time? So if somebody needed a doctor, you could appear as a doctor. If somebody needed medicine, you could appear as medicine. If somebody needed a nurse or a caregiver, you could appear as that caregiver. Wouldn't that be wonderful where you could actually do that? Yeah? And actually be happy to take care of all these people who are sick? Yeah? Wouldn't it be nice to have a happy mind that really wanted to take care of people who are sick? And wouldn't it be nice to really wish that they were all cured of their illnesses and that those illnesses never recurred again? Okay. So this is a practice for us to really spend some time on, because what this practice does is it counteracts our mind that sometimes is reluctant to help people who are sick. Okay. Have you ever had a relative or a friend in the hospital and you kind of know that you should go visit them, but you don't want to? You ever had that situation? Yeah? And when you look inside yourself, well, why don't I want to go to the hospital to see them? Well, I might get sick, and I might see something really ugly, and it's kind of depressing seeing people who are sick. And seeing people who are sick reminds me that I could get sick, and I don't want to be reminded of that. And being in a hospital reminds me of the fact that we could all die, and I would prefer to ignore that. So, you know, sometimes we really come up with all sorts of things that prevent us from helping somebody who's sick. And again, it's a manifestation of our own self-centeredness, and in this case, our own fear. Okay. So by meditating on this verse, by contemplating this verse, and just thinking, you know, how wonderful it would be to have the mind where whenever I saw somebody was sick, my instinctive reaction was to feel, may they be cured of their illness and their injury, and may I help to bring that about, and may I reach out and actually help them. Okay. Wouldn't it be nice to have that kind of mental state? To overcome our fear, to overcome our selfishness? Okay. So I think this verse not only refers to helping people who are physically ill, but it also refers to helping people by giving them the Dharma. Because there's a very common analogy in the Buddha's teachings that the Buddha is like the doctor, the Dharma is like the medicine, and the Sangha are like nurses. We're the patient, okay? And our disease is cyclic existence. And the virus that's causing our disease is ignorance and self-centeredness. Okay, and craving and clinging and anger and animosity. So the Buddha diagnoses our disease and its causes. He gives the medicine of the Dharma. And then the Sangha helps us to take the medicine. Okay, so this verse can also refer to helping people be free of all the misery of samsara, by acting as a Dharma doctor, Dharma medicine, and a Dharma nurse. Okay? Then, verse 8. With showers of food and drink, may I overcome the afflictions of hunger and thirst. May I become food and drink during times of famine. Okay. So with showers of food and drink, may I overcome the afflictions of hunger and thirst. wouldn't it be nice to have your own private jet and tons of food and go to Darfur and spread aid among all the people who are suffering there? Wouldn't that be nice to be able to do? Yeah? To be able to have the material wherewithal, to be able to have the skills, to be able to clear away the hindrances from the various rebels that are preventing the people in Darfur from getting food and water. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to go in and give them these basic elements of life? Yeah? And so we think of, you know, various beings who are actually suffering from hunger and thirst right now, you know, as we throw away extra food from our meals and they don't have enough to eat themselves. Yeah. And so wouldn't it be nice if we could share food and drink and clothing and medicine and shelter with them? Yeah. And not just by, you know, we may start out by writing a check and donating some money for that, but wouldn't it be nice if we could also be personally involved and go to these places and give them the food with our own hands and give them the water with our own hands and really see how happy they are when they have food and drink? Okay? So we imagine being able to do this, and we develop the aspiration to be able to actually do this, and not only to take food and drink to these people, but as Buddhas, can we even manifest as food and drink ourselves? So that if there's no food to be had to bring to people who are starving, may we manifest as food or as water, as beverages, you know, as whatever they need. So personally speaking, I find these kinds of verses so inspiring, you know, to just sit and think, wow, I really wish that I could do this. Now, and of course, in one way, it's a totally impossible wish, but you still wish it anyway. Because bodhisattvas pray for even things that are impossible. Because the thing is that when you aspire for things, no matter how far out they are, they release and open our mind. They release the self-centeredness from our mind, open our mind to actually being able to connect with other beings and step out and help them in even the situations that encounter us that we encounter in our daily life. Okay. Verse 9, may I be an inexhaustible treasury for the destitute. With various forms of assistance, may I remain in their presence. So all those who are destitute, all those beings who are poor, who lack even the necessities of life, food, drink, clothing, medicine, shelter, you know, may we become an inexhaustible treasury where whatever they need, we have and we give to them. Wouldn't that be wonderful to be able to do that? Yeah? And with various forms of assistance, may I remain in their presence. So various forms of assistance. Some people need doctors. Some people need accountants. People need a babysitter. Some people need somebody to fix a broken joint. Somebody needs somebody to cook for them, you know? So whatever sentient beings need, may we fulfill their needs and give them what they need so that they don't have to suffer from deprivation and lack. So may we remain in their presence. So may we, you know, not just go and give them something and run away back to our own flat where we're comfortable, but where we really stay with them and help and be able to go through all the difficulties that helping sentient beings can sometimes entail. Okay, verse 10, for the sake of accomplishing the welfare of all sentient beings, I freely give up my body enjoyments and all my virtues of the three times. Okay, so in order to accomplish the welfare of all sentient beings, in order to not only give them the temporal pleasure in cyclic existence, but to accomplish their ultimate welfare, which is leading them to liberation and enlightenment. So in order to do all of that, may we really practice perfect generosity, giving our body, giving our enjoyments, and giving our virtues. Okay? And giving them of the three times. So our past bodies, enjoyments, and virtues, our present bodies, enjoyments, and virtues, and every body, enjoyments, and virtues that we may have in the future. To not hold any of this in a self-centered way with a feeling of poverty, but really have such an incredible, open, generous heart that we want to give and share all of this for the accomplishing the welfare of all these sentient beings. Mm-hmm. So at first, you know, we think, oh yeah, oh, it'd be great. Give my body, my enjoyments, and my virtues to everybody. And then we start thinking about it a little bit more. Give my body? Hold on a minute. I want to renegotiate this verse. Okay? You know, maybe after I'm dead, then you can have my body. But I'm not so sure I want to give you my body right now. You know, and give you all my wealth and my enjoyments. I have to move out of my flat so you can move in? I don't know if I like that. You know, give up all my nice clothes, give up my car, give somebody else my MRT pass? I don't know about that. Give up my cell phone? Impossible. Impossible. Can't give up my cell phone. You know, my cell phone's part of me. It's glued. Oh, I forget, you call them hand phones here. You know, we not only have five fingers, we also have a hand phone. Okay, it's glued to us. We can't separate from it. Yeah. And we also not only have two ears, but we also have two earphones, you know. So we can walk down the street, you know, with our iPod, you know, tune out the rest of the world. Yeah, and still walk down the street, you know, with our cell phone, our iPod, you know. And now you can even have Windows on your cell phone? Oh, we all need to upgrade to that, don't we? Yeah. And then, you know, give up SMSing people? Oh, no, I can't give that up. Yeah. Give up my credit card? That's asking too much. You know, so when we really begin to think about what these verses mean, all of a sudden our self-centered mind rises up and says, no, you know, I'll give some things. I'll give what I want to give, when I want to give it, when it won't inconvenience me and I won't feel any loss from it. That's when I'll give. But I don't want to give when it endangers my own happiness. You know? Even if I have two or three cell phones, I'm not going to give one up. How many of you have more than one hand phone? Really? How many of you have more than one computer? Okay. I always think it's so funny. We have two shoes. We have 2 feet. And how many pairs of shoes do we have? Yeah, have you ever looked in your closet how many pairs of shoes you have? And you can only wear one pair at a time. But we don't want to give any of them away. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes in this process of generating these aspirational verses, will find that the self-centeredness really comes on very strong. And we get very miserly, very clingy, very afraid. When that happens, okay, then we have to go back and contemplate the topics that we talked about at the beginning of this talk. In other words, all the disadvantages of self-centeredness. Because when we think of the disadvantages of self-centeredness, that gives us a lot more courage and determination to not follow it, because we see that it's actually something that harms us. Okay? And then we go back and we think about the benefit of helping others, and we really, you know, imagine others being happy, and then that gives us a lot more inspiration to be able to help them. Okay, so we have to go back and think about these things.